Well, look at that. It worked. We had some trouble. I was thinking that we were just not meant to record tonight, but it's working. So here we go with the recording. So we just did our opening meditation. We're going to jump right into the reading. In the Sparkle Edition, we're on page 237. The subheading is The Willingness for Healing. If you have the original edition, it is page 198, it's chapter 10, part 3, also called The Willingness for Healing. And in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's page 197. It's chapter 11, part 2, and it's called The Invitation to Healing. All right, The Willingness for Healing, or The Invitation to Healing. If sickness is separation, the will to heal and be healed is the first step toward recognizing what you truly want. Every attack is a step away from this, and every healing thought brings it closer. The Son of God has both Father and Son because He is both Father and Son. To unite having and being is only to unite your will with His, for He wills you Himself. And you will yourself to Him, because in your perfect understanding of Him, you know there is but one will. Yet when you attack any part of God and His kingdom, your understanding is not perfect, and what you will is therefore lost to you. All right, so I'm going to pause there. So essentially, this is saying that every time we attack anyone, have any sort of attack thought, that peace is lost to us. Our awareness of love's presence is lost to us. Our will, what we truly will, what we truly want, again, which is that love of God, is lost to us. Because simply by stepping into any even subtle attack mode, we're now listening to the ego instead of listening to the Holy Spirit. The story that I said before we started recording, I had mentioned that I was already having some examples from the week come to mind, and it's so interesting because I have someone in my neighborhood who has been a teacher for me lately, and I noticed very clearly my judgmental thoughts of this person who, I guess if we were to just paint the picture of, you know, I'm kind of like a hippie and this person loves lawn chemicals and bug killers and killing, you know, all the little critters around the property. And so it's you know, from that example, from that, you know, perspective, we're on sort of two different opposite ends of the spectrum. And I found myself having a lot of judgment come up and immediately noticed as well a loss of peace and sort of this, you know, descent into feeling really not good. And so this is something I want to know my will again, which is what, you know, this is talking about here, which is love. And so I do that through my own willingness to see this person and this situation differently. I'm not there yet, but I am wholly dedicated to working on it. So did anybody have anything come up for this first paragraph? So wanting the will to heal and to be healed is the first step toward recognizing what you truly want. And that is to be happy. And attack thoughts take us away from that. And it's so amazing to me how subtle it is, how subtle those attack thoughts can be. It can be that tiniest little fleeting judgment, and there it is.
Yeah, this is Yogi, and I agree with that, Corinne. But I can sense if it's just even a sensation or a feeling of just any resistance, mm-hmm. that feels like attack to me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you shared that because you're absolutely right. It can be before a thought. It can be a feeling. It can just be that, yeah, that tightening. I can identify with that. I'm glad you shared that, Yogi. Thank you.
Yeah. I just feel that. So I've often wondered that with the Course. Sometimes, you know, when you're driving and someone pulls in front of you and you say something, you know, that's obvious, or you're angry. But sometimes it's just this subtle, like I just been feeling that a lot with my new puppy. I took him to the groomers yesterday and he came back and he was like a different being. And I was just talking to the breeder to figure out how to recalibrate his nervous system and get him to calm down. Mm-hmm. And he's been very naughty and very unruly. And I'm thinking, oh no, what have I got myself into? And then I tighten and my heart tightens.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter, you know, that he's a puppy. He's not a puppy. He's a being. He's a sentient
mm-hmm.
being that I, on some level, I'm attacking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't feel well, you know.
Wow. You know, it's interesting to me. What comes to mind for me is just another example that came up in the situation that I mentioned. And there's a child in my neighborhood that's a really good mirror for if I have any judgmental thoughts or feelings, let's say, this child becomes like Veruca Salt. If you remember that child in Willy Wonka. I see, you know, a spoiled kid. I see somebody with, you know, big attitude for their little age. And yet there have been other times when I've approached this person not having any of that, you know, those preconceived ideas about her already in my mind, and she's as sweet as could be. So it made me think what you shared, Yogi, about just how every being can be that mirror reflecting back to us, you know, which teacher it is that we're looking towards, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And, of course, I called him Lama, and Lama means teacher in Tibet. So, of course, he's already teaching me a lot about myself. So the Course, and I kept looking before I sat down, I kept looking for scriptures in the Course of Miracles, you know, that would speak about this, but he's a brother in the sense that he's in the animal of a, I don't know, you know, but he's a being. So would he be a brother? Would the other? Is an animal the other, you would think?
I think of it all as our brothers. Like there's only, you know, there's only one. There is no separation between anyone. So whether you call it brother or other, how would you define other? What were you thinking when you?
I was just thinking Eckhart Tolle always thinks of other. He doesn't use the word brother. He's a big Course in Miracles person. But he always says other meaning the other person, the other being, or, you know, in Buddhism they just say, you know, sentient being, or Thich Nhat Hanh would say interbeing. So everybody has their own different ways of referring, or an individual or a soul or whatever. But
you're right,
it's all one.
Yeah. That is when it really just becomes semantics. We're all talking about the same thing.
For me, it feels like I don't feel good. I mean, even if I do something to a roach or to a fly or something, I feel guilty. I don't feel good. So it's like, you know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe very extreme, but there's always this tightening, or there's this, I don't feel good because that other sentience is me, is that one, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so how would that relate to tonight with sickness is separation? So attack can be a form of sickness. When you attack, we become sick. Is that what that means?
Yes. When we attack, sickness is when we are not in our right mind. So we are sick when we think we are these separate bodies, when we think, you know, attack thoughts, when we're not thinking with spirit. That's when, and the Course uses that term very broadly in terms of sickness. Mm-hmm.
When we're not attacking, then we're whole, we're in our right mind.
And that's when, yes, that's when we're stepping out of sickness. That's when we're back on the path to restore our full awareness to the love that we truly are.
And we can choose again, right? We can do that no matter
Absolutely.
How bad what we've done.
Always.
We can choose again, right? Yeah.
Always. Thank goodness, right?
Yeah.
That's where now I'm hearing Paula's voice. I don't think she's on the call right now, about just not guilty, you know, where we're not guilty. We always have that power to choose again. And whatever mistake we made was simply just a mistake that is easily overlooked. The Holy Spirit looks straight past it to the truth that... if anybody's on speakerphone, maybe if you would take yourself off speakerphone or mute your line. I'm going to look. Tony, that's actually your line. I'm not sure if you're in the wind or... are you there, Tony? You're not coming through if you're speaking, so I might have to suggest calling back in. And I think that's exactly what Tony is doing. Okay. Sorry. All right, anybody else have anything to add? Let's take the next paragraph. Healing thus becomes a lesson in understanding. And the more you practice it, the better teacher and learner you become. If you have denied truth, what better witnesses to its reality could you have than those who have been healed by it? But be sure to count yourself among them, for in your willingness to join them is your healing accomplished. Every miracle which you accomplish speaks to you of the fatherhood of God. Every healing thought which you accept, either from your brother or in your own mind, teaches you that you are God's son. In every hurtful thought you hold, wherever you perceive it, lies the denial of God's fatherhood and your sonship. So one of the things that stands out to me in this paragraph is the idea how no effort of ours is ever wasted, meaning that every time we choose the miracle, every time we choose for the Holy Spirit and receive that miracle, every healing thought which we accept, either from your brother or in your own mind, no effort is forgotten or wasted. All those little tiny efforts count. And what's coming to mind for me at the moment is how we've talked about this on the call before, and I can't think who or particular examples of when you're not even necessarily talking to the Holy Spirit and like the miracle kind of just kicks in. It sort of automatically happens. And that to me sort of speaks to this, that none of our efforts are ever wasted. We're constantly being taught who it is that we truly are. I'm about to post a blog post about an experience that I had where my husband lit a citronella candle to keep the mosquitoes away when we were outside, and it gave me a sinus headache. And of course I got all bent out of shape, and why did he do this? Why did he light that candle? And you know, I noticed like the blame and like the urge to attack want to come up. And what is this saying so far that we've read, except when we have that urge to attack come up, we've lost the awareness of that love with a capital L that we truly are. We immediately lose that awareness. And so I noticed myself have that thought of not only wanting to attack, but also noticing this thought, that this belief that there's something outside of myself, a citronella candle, that can cause me pain. So I'm saying that that's the cause of, you know, and the citronella candle is a cause and the effect is the sinus headache. What kicked in for me, because I just had this impulse to question that. And just like we've talked about before and how this sort of reflects this idea that no effort is wasted, something just automatically happened in me where I felt prompted to get very quiet and to look at what was happening, which I thought came to me, this is a trap. This is another ego setup for me to keep believing that I am my body and that the pain, the choice for pain, is not coming from the candle. It's coming from this ego script that is, you know, set up to keep me believing that I am Corinne. And so if I need to slow down and explain anything, please ask. But essentially what happened was I sat there, I said to myself, this is coming from my sleeping split mind. It's not coming from the citronella candle. And I'm willing to look at this with the Holy Spirit. And within, and this all didn't take very long to happen, within a couple of minutes, the headache, which was significant, went away. And I had sensation still in my sinuses for a little bit, but I knew the healing happened in my mind and that my body was just going to catch up at some point, and it did. I was pain-free very shortly thereafter. So I did not mean to digress, but I thought that might be a helpful example because it just speaks to the acceptance of healing in our own minds.
Thank you, Corinne, for sharing that. Thank you. Because always feel that the Course is, it's helpful to me when we can apply it to everyday situations. And it's it's not just philosophical rhetoric and
exactly.
A debate, you know.
Exactly. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I just sort of zone out and shut down when it gets really philosophical and debate-ish because I really am about, you know, practicing this in every waking moment because I and, like, those of us on the call, you know, we know our trust is building. We know that this works. And so that's why I very much trust that the situation with my chemical loving neighbor is going to be healed. It's going to, I'm willing. I'm not there yet, but I'm willing. Another ego hook, right? Anybody else have anything to add or share? Anything that stands out to you?
Hi, this is Deidre.
Hey, Deidre.
I just wanted to share, I'm in another program right now, and we're doing an exercise for this month. And it's related to this topic that we're talking about now.
Mm.
And I think it really applies to what we're talking about because the lady running the program, Lisa Natoli, she gave us this example, whatever happens, I don't mind. So that's like the exercise that we're practicing all this month. Whatever happens, I don't mind. Whatever happens, I don't mind. So it's like she described something that happened to her. She went to the beach. And there, I guess where she's from, in Maine, there's a no smoking policy on the beach.
Mm.
And her husband sat down and these people came walking along and they were smoking cigars. And the smoke, as they were sitting there, started blowing directly in their face. So they were kind of like, oh my gosh, you know, they're noticing themselves getting all like bent out of shape and, you know, upset that these people were smoking. And I think one of them made a comment like, well, we don't care. It's a public beach. We can smoke. And why don't you leave or something? And they caught themselves having these egoic based thoughts. And then they were like, yeah, we can just leave. And they got them left. And the point was, is that just like you said, there's nothing outside of you that can mess with your peaceful state of mind. And you're always at choice to choose again.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never about the other people.
Mm-hmm.
It was about choosing to be at peace exactly where they were. And I certainly have many little things that come up in my daily life where I can use whatever happens, I don't mind, to remind myself
mm-hmm.
to stay centered in the peace.
Yeah, that's really powerful, Deidre. you know, it's funny trying that on for myself, thinking about my neighbor who loves, you know, every weed killer and chemical to spray all over his yard, which borders mine. Whatever happens, I don't mind. I notice the resistance come up in me.
Mm-hmm.
And what this is showing me, and this is just occurring to me now as we're talking about this, is, again, it's just like the lesson that I just seemingly learned with the candle, where I'm saying, you know, this candle actually didn't cause a headache. This goes the same with chemicals. Like I'm saying that, you know, that has the power to do harm, to hurt, right? And what am I doing but still making that real, but still saying that that is true versus, again, being willing to see it differently. So all I'm trying to say is that this is showing me where I've invested my belief, and that is exactly where I need to look at it with the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, and that's exactly what she said. She said it's not about making yourself feel bad about having mm-hmm. the feelings. It's just about noticing where you're currently located. And she called it, when you're not at peace, you've simply gone back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like just recognizing that that's not the truth of you.
Mm-hmm.
You've just gone back to sleep for a minute, but you can choose to wake up at any time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Deirdre, yeah, and you're right, I'm asleep. And also, Corinne, I'm a very chemically, or was a very chemically sensitive person to cigarettes and to everything, because I've never smoked. But where I live in Tucson, they just wanted to just use the skies. They're doing it all around the world, geoengineering or chemtrails. And for some reason, it was worse than it was in Los Angeles or in Bellingham, Washington. And every time, I'm a hiker, so every time I went out, I tried to change my schedule or I tried to wear a mask or whatever. And it just got to the point where I could really smell all the stuff, and it was really affecting me very badly. And then one day I watched this YouTube video where this guy said, there are many agendas in the world, but I just trust. I just send love to the chemtrails. And I thought, what drug is this guy on? Yeah, you know, and it worked. And
wow.
Now, I mean, like I went hiking today, and it just doesn't bother me. It just mm-hmm. doesn't bother me anymore. It just doesn't,
mm-hmm.
and I still have the same body,
mm-hmm.
still same sensitivity, but it just doesn't bother me anymore.
Mm,
the
wow.
chemicals, and in Tucson, it's pretty bad. It just doesn't bother me anymore.
Wow.
So I don't
That's
know
a really
how
good
that
example.
Could be, you know, but it just doesn't. Maybe my attention is not so fixated on it. I don't know. And then I would find remedies. I'd find these therapeutic grade essential oils to put on my body, or on my certain parts of my brain or my pituitary gland. So even I think the Holy Spirit led me to find a natural solution that would help me. It's not that there isn't anything that could have helped me. It did help me. But even when I don't wear those essential, therapeutic-grade essential oils, I can still go out, and the chemtrails don't bother me.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a huge example. Did I hear Paul? I'm not sure if that – I think that was Paul.
Yeah, that was me. I was just affirming that was – actually, all three examples that you guys have shared have been super helpful. And that chemtrail, when for whatever reason, really – resonates, because that's something that triggers me. And after reading these two paragraphs, I think that's a perfect example of like a real life example of what the Course is saying here.
Yeah.
Sending love, and you know, and if you're not doing that, then your body is constricting. And there's also, you know, it affects our immune system when we get angry. We know that. So it's really interesting. It all ties together.
It sure does. And it really speaks to, and Yogi, the example that you gave was just so powerful. It really speaks to how this really is all about a change of mind, always. That, you know, if we still are very much too afraid to accept healing directly, the Holy Spirit will give it to us in a form that we can accept. So for,
yeah.
you know, the time being, whatever it is, whether it's medicine or essential oils or, you know, something else, it's a form that we can accept at that time, and yet we can still go beyond that, like you're describing. You know, it just doesn't bother you anymore. So that really
yeah.
speaks just the power of that change of mind and how this really
Yeah, I
really
loved what you said, Yogi, about sending love to the chemtrails, because I've never thought of it in exactly that way, but it's perfect, you know. That's awesome.
Yeah, I actually wasn't the one who came up with it. I thought the guy was on some kind of drugs that he wasn't sharing, but, you know, but it worked. He said, look, you know, and he said he clearly wasn't attached to the dream. I don't know whether he was studying the Course in Miracles, but he just clearly wasn't attached to the dream.
Mm-hmm.
He said in this world, and he said when he's hiking, he puts his mind on the trees, the flowers, and finds other things, and he says it's still a beautiful world even with the chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
And God is still in charge. It's like, you know, I really feel that's what's thrown off the weather patterns, especially in Tucson, all over the world, not just here, where it was so dry. I mean, your brain just feels like it's just drying up. You know, your whole body is just drying up. No matter how much water you drink, it just sucks everything out of you. And I said, okay, I don't know if I could stay here this summer, but I prayed to the Holy Spirit and said, please send rain. And I didn't think we were going to get rain. Now, of course, if it rains where you guys are, that's fine. But in Tucson, when it rains, practically the whole city stops and celebrates. Like everybody, it rained on Thursday, and people just stopped. They were honking their horns. You know, Friday, I took my puppy outside, and I was just sobbing, just thanking the Holy Spirit or God. And I said, look, I said, you guys can put this stuff in the sky, but when God is ready, he's going to give us rain. We're not in charge. Our ego thinks we're in charge, but we're not. It's still up to God. Even though it's the dream and we're in the dream, I really feel that, you know, God is still in charge. The Holy Spirit is still in charge of this world. So, you know.
You know what comes to mind for me when I was just listening to you say about how that man seemed to just not be attached to the dream, and how, you know, he could just still go out and enjoy things and just, you know, focus on the trees and whatnot. The lesson in the Course, I am under no laws but God's, comes to mind. Like, that's
mm-hmm.
just a perfect example of that lesson, I'm under no laws but God's, because when we are listening, when we're there, we are unaffected by what seemingly is happening in the dream. So, awesome.
I thank you for everybody sharing. I would actually like to bring something up that has been going on with me. This is Carol. For me, I started sitting with a woman last week who's 87 years old. And she had a situation where she drove her car into the garage and didn't turn her car off. So she's dealing with some short-term memory loss, some other things going on, you know, physically. Make a long story short, she watches television the whole time I'm there. The whole time I'm there, the television is on very loud. And I don't have television on except certain things in my home. I have a very quiet home. And when I was raising my kids, I didn't, you know, I don't watch the news. I just don't, you know, I don't get into all that drama. So it's very, very different for me to be exposed to so much, you know, television. And I've been taking the Course. Because she is capable of attending to herself. And she would fall asleep the first day or so, and I would turn the volume down. And then she would wake up and turn it back on. I mean, like literally, like seconds after I turned it down. And so I said, you know, I really have to hand this over. I have to hand it over because there's a lesson for me with this. And I started, like, writing the Course, whatever I would read, because I've always been the type of person that when I read, I have to have it totally quiet.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I absorb things. And so I very much felt the challenge of this. And I know that I'm there for a reason, and I'm literally writing the course. I'm whatever, like a sentence or, you know, whatever I'm reading, I write it down and working to absorb that.
Mm.
And if anybody has anything to say, it just sounds so familiar with what people have shared so far.
Yeah, yeah. So you're writing down the course, like, what, when you're there, just, like, as reminders for yourself?
I literally, like, she sits in a recliner chair, and so I'm behind her at the table, and I have Course in Miracles opened. I write, I read, I do whatever I can to separate myself from the chatter and just, you know, practice as much silence as I can in my head. But it just seems very challenging because it's not something that I'm exposed to on a regular basis.
Right. Does anybody have anything that comes to mind? Some suggestions for Carol?
Yeah, this is Yogi, and I couldn't hear you very well, Carol. I heard some of it.
Oh,
I turned my phone up, but I didn't hear all of it.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
You're slightly better, but still somewhat faint.
Okay. I'm actually on a headset, and I thought it was okay. I'm going to disconnect the headset. Wait a second.
Maybe I can repeat
okay.
What I said. Would that be helpful?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just talking, you're talking about chemical reactions, which definitely...
Oh, I can hear you much better now.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have that. I'm very sensitive, but for me, this is the noise pollution that's going on for me.
Yeah.
I heard you say... Was it someone you're working with, Carol, and she has the TV up very high?
Yes, and listen, watches it, you know, the whole time I'm there. And the news is on, I guess it's 2-3 hours, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, so I'm learning things that I just am not exposed to because I choose not to. And my vision is to work with the elderly. But to be very, very honest, it's to come and go, not to be there constantly.
You know what comes to mind for me? This is Yogi, Carol. I worked with children for many years, and in between that I worked with the elderly also, too, before I started teaching yoga and meditation. And that's what would happen. You know, I'd work with... people who had dementia or people, they'd sit and watch the television and turn the television up really, really high. And you know what? I couldn't handle that. I couldn't. I don't care how many courses and miracles I took. I couldn't handle that. Sorry. I mean, the noise pollution would be a challenge for me. I mean, if I was listening to Beethoven or something edifying, but that's just noise. That's just that's noise generated by the ego. The news, at least. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, I know that this is a temporary situation, and I also know that, you know, I've got a goal in mind, and so I take a tablet with me, and I write things like, I am spirit, God is with me, I want peace. And, you know, I write it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's my mantra in my head.
Yeah.
And
I do that too, Carol, with anything, when my mind is noisy. And I find that the noise in my mind is usually the noise that's projected out in some situation that I attract. So for me, I know that when I'm in a situation that I don't care for, I know I'm about, when I write like that, and I'm willing to do what you're doing is trust the Holy Spirit, I know it's going to be something better is on the way.
Thank you. Thank you for your encouragement. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's great, Carol, that you're sitting there and using that time to write and to write it over and over and utilize those mantras. The other, you know, thing that just came to mind is, I don't know if this is, it doesn't sound like somebody who's interested in being engaged, like by going for a walk, or I don't even, you know
yeah.
if that's even remotely.
I tried that the first couple days, and then I thought, you know what, I need to step back, and I need to, you know, I need do nothing. And so I'm using this time as a time of, I don't want to say meditation because it's not really very meditative, but I am taking little breaks. I find I'm walking outside and stretching and, you know, breathing and just like taking in some piece of what I, you know, something, some piece of the course. And I believe that there, this is the beginning of something much better for me. But yeah, I just, I appreciate that because this definitely has been a challenge for me to. It's just something that, I mean, my kids are 20, and when they were little, I just, I mean, we very rarely have television on in our home. And when we do, it's a choice, you know, of something that we want to watch. There's just, I choose not to, you know, watch violence and that kind of thing and hear about it. So.
Well, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. And I appreciate what people have shared because I love this, the invitation to healing.
I don't know if this helps. This is Deidre. I'm very, I'm like you, Carol. I like, you know, my quiet time around the house. I don't watch TV a lot of the time. So I can relate to what you're sharing. If anything, what's most comforting to me is music. I have that playing a lot during the day. but for some people, and the reason I'm sharing this is it might be helpful for you. Noise like that can be very comforting for someone who's looking for companionship, and they don't really realize that that's what they're hungry for. Because really, anybody that has that much noise going on is usually looking for some kind of connection or love from, you know, source. And so at least that's been my experience working with children who are into, you know, video games and a lot of loud activity and other people that I've been around that have, you know, a lot of noise going on in the background of their life. It's actually a source of comfort for them. That's been my experience anyway. So it's a different way of looking at the noise. And we all sort of respond to things differently. So I really think what you're doing is really the what the best thing you can do for yourself. And you're also not trying to change or dictate how this other person handles themselves, which is really, really positive as well.
Yeah.
So if you can, if you can sort of, you know, have your own boundaries as to how much time you can tolerate spending in that space, because that's going to be really important for filling up your energy source. Making sure you don't get drained yourself, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yes, I definitely know what you mean. I, you know, again, this is relatively new for her. I mean, this happened in November, but she's been in the hospital for a very long time. And from what I was told, she was very, very independent. So this is a huge shift for her. This is no surprise to me. I actually found this job through Craigslist and interviewed with her granddaughter, who's a yoga teacher. And she went back to L.A., which is where she's from. And so with that, I mean, I know that this is a temporary thing She's going to be moving to Tennessee. And I just feel like, okay, Carol, there's a reason why you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate what everybody's saying. I mean, I'm not superhuman. I'm just looking to be open to learn also.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal and my vision is to do this with the elderly, but to come and go and to assist them in having a certain quality of life. And this particular situation, I've actually had a couple ideas where I don't think she needs for someone to be with her for, you know, straight 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought mm-hmm. about introducing something. So I'm going to continue to pray about it, hand it over,
mm-hmm.
and I'll get direction.
Absolutely, and that's what I was thinking too. Hand her over, hand that TV over, and just keep doing that until you feel like you can be quiet enough to listen as to what, you know, the next step is with her.
Thanks.
So thank you, Carol.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Oh, let's read another paragraph. So I'm just going to read the last sentence of the paragraph that we just read because it sort of flows into the next sentence. In every hurtful thought you hold, wherever you perceive it, lies the denial of God's fatherhood and your sonship. And denial is as total as love. You cannot deny part of yourself because the remainder will seem to be unintegrated and therefore without meaning. And being without meaning to you, you will not understand it. To deny meaning must be to fail to understand. You can heal only yourself, for only God's Son needs healing. He needs it because he does not understand himself and therefore knows not what he does. Having forgotten his will, he does not know what he wants. So denial is as total as love. If we think of love being all-encompassing, denial is all-encompassing as well. So it's again, one or the other. And if we deny part of ourselves, it's saying the rest of it is going to seem to be without meaning. We're not going to understand the rest of it if we deny even just part of it. So denying means we're going to fail to understand. So again, this is where the Course is saying the same thing over and over. If we're denying who we truly are, we're listening to the ego, and we're not going to know the love that we really are. I'm hearing that same message in this paragraph. And again, that teaching where the sole responsibility of the miracle worker is to accept atonement for himself, this next sentence where it says, you can heal only yourself, for only God's Son needs healing.
You know,
I'll throw out there too. Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
Go ahead.
No, Carol, you can go ahead.
I just something was coming to me as I was listening to you, Corinne, because, you know, I'm actually in some ways having fun with this where, you know, I'll come home and I'll be able to tell my kids and my husband what the weather's supposed to be like or the soccer games and everything that's going on. And this weekend, you know, there was a recipe on one of these shows that we were able to try. So I'm trying to be light about this because
uh-huh.
my kids know I don't even know what goes on in the world. So it's sort of kind of funny where I'm like, oh, I can tell you anything you want to know in the tri-state area. So, you know, it's just I'm looking for the positive, and I'm finding it in certain situations.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful, beautiful. If anybody is, I'm hearing background noise, so if you can just mute your line, if anybody's doing dishes or using a microwave, I think that's what I'm hearing. If you wouldn't mind just pressing *6, thank you. So, yes, before you spoke, Carol, I just had one other thought, and it was about where it says, he needs it, meaning healing, the God's son needs healing, because he does not understand himself and therefore knows not what he does. That sentence to me stood out just in thinking about, you know, any challenging relationship that we might have. Of course, the lesson is for us, and yet, you know, I was thinking of my neighbor. He just knows not what he does. And so I simply need to be willing to see differently. Let's read another paragraph. Healing is a sign that he wants to make whole, and this willingness opens his own ears to the voice of the Holy Spirit, whose message is wholeness. He will enable you to go far beyond the healing you would undertake, for beside your small willingness to make whole, he will lay his own complete will and make yours whole. What can the Son of God not accomplish with the fatherhood of God in him? And yet the invitation must come from you, for you have surely learned that whom you invite as your guest will abide with you. So this paragraph just reminds me of, there's another quote elsewhere in the course that talks about how our willingness need not be complete because his is perfect. So this is saying the same thing. In sort of in the middle of the paragraph, he will enable you to go far beyond the healing you would undertake, for beside your small willingness to make whole, he will lay his own complete will and make yours whole. So that's, again, where we're asked to do so little. We don't have to master this. We don't have to ace the course. All we have to do is have that tiny, tiny bit of willingness, like a mustard seed size, maybe even less. It's just that tiny bit that we need. And that sets the stage for massive miracles. Let's see the next paragraph. The Holy Spirit cannot speak to an unwelcoming host because he will not be heard. The eternal guest remains, but his voice grows faint in alien company. He needs your protection, but only because your care is a sign that you want him. Think like him ever so slightly, and the little spark becomes a blazing light that fills your mind so that he becomes your only guest. Whenever you ask the ego to enter, you lessen his welcome. He will remain, but you have allied yourself against him. Whatever journey you choose to take, he will go with you, waiting. You can safely trust his patience, for he cannot leave a part of God. Yet you need far more than patience. That's such a beautiful paragraph. Think like him ever so slightly, and that little spark becomes a blazing light that fills your mind so that he becomes your only guest. And the eternal guest, love, God, the Holy Spirit, and I guess we could think about that particularly as the Holy Spirit, the eternal guest remains, but when we're listening to the ego again, he'll still be there waiting very patiently, but we're just not welcoming that voice, that eternal guest anymore. So I just thought this was a really, really powerful paragraph with some really beautiful quotes in it, beautiful statements. I think we can read two more paragraphs in 4 minutes. Let's go for it. You will never rest until you know your function and fulfill it, for only in this can your will and your Father's be wholly joined. To have him is to be like him, and he has given himself to you. You who have God must be as God, for his function became yours with his gift. Invite this knowledge back into your minds and let nothing that will obscure it enter. The guest whom God sent you will teach you how to do this if you but recognize the little spark and are willing to let it grow. Your willingness need not be perfect because his is. If you will merely offer him a little place, he will lighten it so much that you will gladly extend it. And by this extending, you will begin to remember creation. Would you be hostage to the ego or host to God? You will accept only whom you invite. You are free to determine who shall be your guest and how long he shall remain with you. Yet this is not real freedom, for it still depends on how you see it. The Holy Spirit is there, although he cannot help you without your invitation, and the ego is nothing whether you invite it in or not. Real freedom depends on welcoming reality, and of your guests, only he is real. Know then who abides with you merely by recognizing what is there already, and do not be satisfied with imaginary comforters, for the comforter of God is in you. These paragraphs are just so loaded with such beautiful comforting statements. I don't even know what to say. I feel like this says it perfectly. There is nothing to say. I think the thing that stands out to me the most that I'll end with, and then I'll just see if anybody else has anything that you want to add, this last line that we just read, know then who abides with you merely by recognizing what is there already. If we can just touch, even for a moment, the fact that we're healed already, it's already done, everything is, our healing, our wholeness, it's all been restored to us. We just have simply chosen to not accept that. And so if we can touch, even for like the faintest split hair of a second, that he is there already, God is beside us, the Holy Spirit is with us, we're not alone, then, that's allowing that tiny little spark to just grow within. So I wanted to see, does anybody else have anything to add or to share, anything that stands out to you about the paragraphs that we just read? It was a lot. It was a lot of good stuff. Sounds like we're good. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. And we will meet again next week.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.